Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to drhoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I thank you, as always, for sending me your questions, and please send them to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. I want to talk to you today. I talked to you other podcasts ago about the dietary guidelines. Well, they've been in now for a good 6 weeks. I want to talk to you about the key elements that they're proposing. And let me read some of this to you right from chapter one of the dietary guidelines. The key recommendations for healthy eating patterns should be applied in their entirety, given the interconnectedness relationship that each dietary component can have with others. And as illustrated in these chapters, there's more than one way to put these key recommendations into action. It's exemplified by the eating patterns that translate and integrate the key recommendations into an overall healthy way we eat. So, what are they? Here are the key recommendations, dietary guidelines for 2015 to 2020. Here we go, America. A healthy eating pattern includes, and they say first, consume. A healthy eating pattern that accounts for all foods and beverages within an appropriate calorie level. Now, you're probably asking me, what do I know the appropriate calorie level for me? That's going to be another topic for another podcast, because calorie needs are different on a daily basis, and we should not be eating the same amount of calories every day. But I digress. I promise I will expound more on that in a later podcast. So, a healthy eating pattern includes, according to the 2015-2020 dietary guidelines, bullet point number one, a variety of vegetables from all the subgroups, dark green, red, and orange, legumes, beans, and peas, starchy, and other vegetables. Terrific. Next bullet point, fruits, especially whole fruit. I like the emphasis on whole fruit here, which is an excellent idea. You get the fiber. Next bullet point, grains, at least half of which are whole grains. Okay, Dietary Guidelines Committee is moving in the right direction, at least insisting more on whole grains instead of any grains and lumping them all willy-nilly together, whole and refined. So, the emphasis on whole grains is good. Next bullet point, fat-free or low-fat dairy, including milk, yogurt, cheese, and or fortified soy beverages. They're still missing the mark on fat here. Next bullet point. A variety of protein foods, including seafood, lean meats and poultry, eggs, legumes, your beans and peas again, and nuts, seeds, and soy products. And the very next bullet point is oils. They go on to say that a healthy eating pattern limits saturated fats and trans fats, added sugars, and sodium. The key recommendations that are quantitative are provided for several components of the diet that should be limited. These components are of particular public health concern in the United States, and the specified limits can help individuals achieve healthy eating patterns within calorie limits. Bullet point number one, consume less than 10% of calories per day from added sugars. Terrific. Why am I jumping up and down? They're still saying you could have some sugar, right? Well, this is the first time they're placing a real limitation on the consumption of sugar. So this is a reason to do a little jig of joy, from where I sit anyway. So, consume less than 10% of calories per day from added sugar. Great advice. Hopefully in the next issue of the Dietary Guidelines in 2020, that'll be even less than that or eliminated altogether. Next bullet point. Consume less than 10% of your calories per day from saturated fat. Ah, they missed the mark here. And consume less than 2,300 milligrams per day of sodium. That's about a teaspoon. Next bullet point. If alcohol is consumed, it should be consumed in moderation. Up to one drink per day for women and up to two drinks per day for men, and only by adults of legal drinking age. Now, going back to one of these bullet points here, which is what I want to talk about. Consume less than 10% of calories from saturated fats. So, what they've done, however, they're not putting a limit on all fat anymore, saying that all fat should be less than 30% of calories. They're not doing that anymore. Okay? And have you noticed there was no mention of cholesterol? Because the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee has not talked about cholesterol at all. They've eliminated any warnings about cholesterol. And they've reversed nearly four decades of nutrition policy by now concluding that dietary fats have no real impact on cardiovascular risk. They're moving in the right direction, but they miss the mark when it comes to saturated fats. So I want to talk more about that. And they're really not making a real distinction between healthy saturated fats and unhealthy man-made trans fats, okay? And we know there has been lots in the scientific research over the past 5 to 10 years that there is no real association between saturated fats and heart disease. So, more than 40 years ago is when health authorities started talking about saturated fat and cholesterol. And really, they talked about the 7-country study, which was started by Ansel Keys. Now, what we do know is that much of that was flawed. Let me tell you a little bit about the Ansel Keys studies. This was back in 1953. Keys summarized that the complex of degenerative heart disease had to do with the amount of serum cholesterol, and it had to do, and that was impacted by dietary fat. Unfortunately, the fallacy here is in the 7-country study, there were originally 22 countries that were studied, but only 7 of them, which were cherry-picked, fit into Key's hypothesis that dietary saturated fat was to be demonized and is the evil that contributed to heart disease. So basically, the authors cherry-picked the evidence to fit their theory that saturated fat promotes heart disease. But in fact, some of the countries with the highest saturated fat intakes had the lowest rates of heart disease, but this was deliberately hidden. And I want to say once again, you've heard me say it in other podcasts, this is the problem with scientific research. You can't be married to a hypothesis. As a good scientist, as a good researcher, you want to have a theory about something, but then spend the rest of your career trying to discredit it or disprove it. We have to be neutral when it comes to this. Correlation is not causation. Even though Americans were told to limit their fat to 30% of total calories and saturated fat to 10. So what am I driving at here? I'm getting back to the dietary guidelines where there is no longer a restriction on total fat, but the restriction is on saturated fat. But what we do know is that the advice to reduce our saturated fat intake has paradoxically increased our cardiovascular risks. Why? Because what they've replaced the saturated fat with, which is a lot of omega-6 fats, which are very pro-inflammatory, right? And a lot of carbohydrates. So the food industry compensated by replacing saturated fat with added sugars, its first cousin white flour, and all of that, and too many omega-6 fats. So you want to remember what I've said before about vegetable oils. You want to be able to, or as Mary Enig said, our fats and oils should be eaten before they can oxidize in their original packaging, such as seeds and plants. But the reason so many of these vegetable oils are bad for us, and I'm talking about corn oil, safflower, sunflower, soybean oil, cottonseed, grapeseed oil. And you know, a lot of people prefer grapeseed oil because it has a nice high smoke point, which is good for high temperature cooking, but it's still very high in omega-6. And this is the problem. Not only that, the vegetable oil industry doesn't want you to know all the processing that happens to extract these oils from plants like corn and the canola plant and sunflower and safflower, okay? But this is exactly what makes them so volatile. They're subjected to high heat extraction. They're subjected to deodorization, to bleaching, because they don't look very good when they've been extracted, right? But these are the things we've been told to ingest. So, and that's exactly what we don't want. So getting back to the saturated fats, even a study that was led by Harvard in 2010 found that there was no significant evidence that dietary saturated fat is associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease, and that the authors of the seven-country study actually collected diet and health data from 22 countries, which I said before, but ignored the inconvenient data from 16 countries and subsequent analysis of the data collected from all 22 nations disproved their theory. And it's too bad, because since the 50s and 60s, we've been on this low-fat thing for way too many decades. All right. So there are lots of saturated fats, by the way, which don't negatively affect blood cholesterol at all. Primarily stearic acid, which is the predominating saturated fat in beef, as well as chocolate. The real problem is we're talking about the omega-6 fats, but we're not just talking about use of vegetable oil either. The omega-6 fats are prevalent in our grains. So, still being told by dietary guidelines to, all right, at least make them whole grain instead of refined grain, that's still better. But our grain consumption is really what's fueling our omega-6 fatty acid intake, not just the grains, but the meat that we eat, the factory farmed animals, which are fed all those grains. It makes them inherently more unhealthy. Those animals have a lot more omega-6 in their fat stores than the beneficial omega-3s. All right. So, trans fats, as you know, are the real demon. Saturated fat is really seen as a red herring more than anything. And even at a meeting of the Institute of Food Technologists said that the evidence linking saturated fat and risk of cardiovascular disease is not conclusive and must be considered in the context of its replacement by refined carbohydrates. Other scientists at this meeting raise the overlooked evidence that the decades-long policy of replacing saturated fats like butter and lard with even greater quantities of mostly polyunsaturated vegetable oils in high omega-6 fats has had dire consequences. Their comments dovetailed with the debate sparked by a high-profile meta-analysis published by research at Harvard and Children's Hospital, which found, and I quote, no significant evidence that dietary fat is associated with an increased risk of coronary heart disease or cardiovascular disease, end quote. And in another study, the scientists echoed that more data are needed to elucidate whether cardiovascular disease risks are likely to be influenced by the specific nutrients used to replace saturated fat. Okay? And we're talking about refined carbohydrates and too many of the wrong fats. So there is a wonderful conclusion in a study that I just read from Thorne that was in the Alternative Medicine Review, and this was back several years ago, an examination of the evidence supporting the association of dietary cholesterol, saturated fat with serum cholesterol, development of coronary artery disease. Here's what they conclude. The hypothesis of coronary heart disease as the result of excessive intake of saturated fats may no longer be sustainable. Research indicates that dietary consumption of cholesterol is not reflected in serum levels, and that very low serum levels seem to contribute to all-cause mortality. Okay. They say that now they can conclude that the lipid hypothesis of atherosclerosis is based on several false premises, including linear causation, fallacious national mortality statistics, biased age and subject selection, and the biggest one, methodological inaccuracies. And that's what we've seen. And by the way, cholesterol operates on a negative feedback loop. When we're eating more dietary cholesterol, our liver cranks out less of it. I'm really happy that the dietary guidelines really didn't speak of dietary cholesterol at all. So eat your eggs, your meat, and your butter, although they fall short about saturated fat, which I just discussed with you. But cholesterol is a necessary substance in our body. Our liver makes about 70 to 80% of it. 7-dehydrocholesterol is under our skin. It reacts with UVB rays from the sun to make vitamin D. And 40 to 60% of our brain is made from cholesterol. Infants need it for proper brain development. And the Framingham Heart Study, you've heard me talk about this before. Framingham Heart Study found that those individuals with desirable cholesterol levels, less than 200, they actually scored lower on attention and concentration, verbal fluency, abstract reasoning than those with higher cholesterol levels. As a matter of fact, we've known in the scientific research since the 1970s and 1980s that people ages 80 and above, late 70s, 80s and above, they live longer if they had an average total cholesterol of about 268. Go figure, big pharma and your statins, right? Very low cholesterol is associated with dementia, with depression, with moodiness, with aggressive behavior, with violence, with decreased learning ability and intelligence. Did you also know a total cholesterol of 160 or less may be a risk factor for cancer, increased mortality from cancer, infections, and suicide? Right? So, dietary guidelines, you are on your way, but not quite there yet. And I thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In on this Intelligent Medicine podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.